We have one item from yesterday's agenda that we're going to attend to this morning. That was the Enforcement Committee report. Captain Pete is going to provide that report to the council. And then we'll move on to the first agenda item under today's schedule, which is the Scallop Committee report. But first, Captain Pete.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rodney informed me this morning that his doctor put him on no heavy lift orders for the next 6 weeks. So to accommodate him, I figured I'd take the report for him. We held our last meeting on September 10th, and one of our instructions was to try and simplify some regulations. So at Dave Gaethel's suggestion, we took a look at standardizing fixed fishing gear marking in the EEZ. I'll discuss that more in detail. The other issues we talked about were a Scout Committee motion in Section 2.12.2 of Framework 22, which we discussed in detail regarding the option to allow vessels to turn off their VMS if they do not intend to land scallops and if they render their vessels incapable of landing scallops. And it was the sense of the Enforcement Committee that to encourage owners to take advantage of the existing power-down provisions already in place as long as they don't have the more restrictive permits that require VMS to be on 24/7. And the committee does not favor selective use of VMS for the limited access general category fleet or any fleet for that matter. There was also some discussion regarding Section 2.12.1 of Framework 22 on changing the polling rates for the IFQ and incidental permits in the limited access general category fleet to 1 hour from 30 minutes, and the committee agreed it would entertain a motion to change the incidental permits to 60 minutes, but the polling interval for IFQ permits should be left as is. And since the SCALB committee did not pass a motion on the issue, we didn't reach a formal position, but we wanted to advise you of the sense of the Enforcement Committee on that discussion. And if there are any other issues that the Scout Committee would like us to look at under Framework 22, we'd be certainly happy to address them. There was also some general discussion regarding the status of any potential electronic video monitoring. The consensus was that if such a system were adopted, it would be treated in the same manner as observer data. It would be not subject to FOIA and only releasable by court order. And also, there were no updates on any instances of fishing vessels fishing under Passamaquoddy tribal rights or claiming to do so. We've been keeping an eye on the vessels that we suspect have been engaged, and they haven't been engaged in that activity. Both no OLE and the Coast Guard have been actively monitoring that situation. So with respect to fixed fishing gear marking in the EEZ, this is a table that staff put together. Lou did a nice job of compiling all the different marking requirements. These are in your document under tab 11. This is chart 3. And then we put together, what we did was we looked at this and put together a more standardized proposal, which is chart 1 under tab 11. And this is a graphic that Rodney put together, and it's sort of an illustration of what the marking requirements would look like, using gillnets as an example. And this next slide is simply what a real-life demonstration we had the training center on Cape Cod put together just to see what it would look like and to do some testing to see how easy it would be to sight. So what are our next steps in terms of vetting this proposal? We certainly need to work through the advisory panel for the Enforcement Committee and get their input. And what we propose is simply a first draft of what we would like to do in terms of standardization. I suspect the final product, if there is one, would be a little bit different or maybe a lot different depending upon the input we get from the advisory panel. And also, the committee seeks direction from the council to continue whether we should continue this initiative and direction on how to socialize this plan with the Mid-Atlantic Council and also the Atlantic States Council. My apologies, Atlantic State Marine Fisheries Commission, and also pursuing a public process to get additional input. Yes, and our next meeting is on December 7th, and it's in Portsmouth. And the agenda items we'll be looking at are to do follow-up on the fixed fishing gear marking issue and also look at the draft penalty policy and NOAA's OLE's enforcement priority policy, and we'll be looking at basically what is in the Coast Guard Authorization Act with respect to commercial fishing vessel safety. So that concludes my report. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
Thanks, Pete. Questions for Pete? Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess a question the Enforcement Committee is, I appreciate the efforts and work and the thoughts about standardized marking for fixed gear, but we've got in Section 697.21 standardized gear marking for lobster gear, and I'm wondering what is the problem. And if I can answer that, then I've got some comments about the proposal.
So if I understand, the question is, what's the problem? David, you want to let David address.
Yeah, the problem is it was identified at the committee level is that in federal waters, both for fixed gear fishermen and mobile gear fishermen, the gear is either being marked incorrectly or, in the case of lobster gear, between 3 and roughly 15 miles. The requirements are the same as in state waters. There is no requirements for radar reflectors and these types of things. The result is that fixed gear fishermen can't figure out how to set next to other fixed gear fishermen because they can't tell how the gear runs. They can't see it. And for mobile gear fishermen, you don't stand a chance. I mean, there's a whole new generation of lobster fishermen that don't adhere to what I would call traditional practices of who fishes where. And they come out and set gear with buoys that are about the size of a seagull, maybe. And they're 20 trap trawls set all over flat bottom, and you get in them, and there's a huge problem with lost gear. And then there's also the problem of, like I said, fixed gear, people sitting next to each other, only they're not. They're really sitting across each other, and then people are cutting each other. And it's become a really big problem in some areas. And the hope was to standardize marking requirements in federal waters for two reasons. One was so that other fishermen could tell what people were doing, and also so that enforcement people could tell what kind of gear it was. That was the idea behind having people label them with the type of gear that's underneath it, because as we all know, most of the enforcement vessels that are out there don't have the capability of hauling fixed gear, so the only way they really know what's on a buoy is if it was labeled. So this was an attempt to make the regulations more enforceable from an enforcement perspective, as well as to kind of clean up the ocean, if you will, so that everybody can tell what the other guy's doing.
Yeah, thanks, David. Coming from a state of 5,000 lobstermen and about 3 million traps, we don't have that degree of problem. And I'm not at all sure why this council is attempting to regulate a fishery that's not even under our purview. I mean, there's huge costs to the industry. There's a public process where the industry hasn't been involved in this deliberation. Some of the proposals here concern a single pot in federal waters. Well, by the whale rules, they're not allowed to fish singles in federal waters anyhow. I suspect there'll be greatly exasperated protected resources issues with whales if we put high flyers and polyballs all within the 0 to 12-mile zone as we struggle to reduce our entanglements. I understand, there could be a problem, but I think the council has no business in this and that. If there is a problem, it should go to the ASMSC and let it work through the lobster board and the ASMSC enforcement committee. It would be much better resolution.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I suspect there's very little enforcement done now with gear markings, minimal to none. And I think this is an enforcement issue, definitely. And so I don't think by changing any regulations will increase the enforcement. So can you tell me how you intend to, you know, why don't we just beef up enforcement? If you see a Clorox bottle, you know, that's that in the EEZ, that's illegal, right? And what's being done to enforce that?
Yeah, can I just chime in on that? The problem is when you get down, like David came up with that, was up around New Hampshire. But when we get down the Monkfish area, when you get the gillnets down there, it's the same thing down there. They're not marking them correctly. Some of them don't even mark them at all. And then you end up with a gear conflict problem. You got mobile gear going through there, and then they're towing these guys up. And even when they're towing north and south and the gear is east and west, you come upon the gear, you don't know which the east end or the west end. You don't know which side to go. That's what we were trying to do, make it palatable for both fishermen, the mobile gear fishermen and the other fixed gear fishermen, to know which way to set the gear was set out.
So, Rodney, is there something we can... as part of the enforcement committee, asked the Coast Guard to have some type of pulse op in areas where we, instead of doing a broad brush approach, if we know a specific area that there's a problem, why can't we ask the Coast Guard to go out there and look at everything that isn't marked properly and do that?
Right.
Yeah, I that's a good idea, but I think that a lot of it is some of the new fishermen that have got into the fishing in the recent years don't understand the rules that were set before, and they're just setting gear out there. There's no markings that are standard anymore. And the lobstermen are the best of them all, I would say, down our way. They are the best of them all. They do mark their gear, and they do set them according to the way they're supposed to set them. But the problem is when the gillnetters move in and out. That's the problem we've been having. So. Our attempt was to make everybody aware of this, make everybody, like, know what it was, everybody uniform, and then maybe if there is a problem, then have a pulse op on it. But right now, there is, I mean, we got gear markings for lobster gear, and the gear markings for gillnet, they're not, some of them don't even have high flyers anymore. When you get south of Block Island, they just set out buoys. So if it's a day like today where there's cloud cover, you don't even know you're on it. You're coming onto it till you're entangled in it.
Pulse ops certainly are an option. This was presented as some low-hanging fruit. Clearly, it's a little higher in the tree than we thought. It's pretty clear that the marking requirements were made in a stovepipe of the FMP, and we sort of our attempt at integrating those requirements. I'm not sure if the PALSOT solves the solution of the trying to simplify the regulations, which was our intent. But it's again certainly an option. So that's the intent, is to simplify things, and I recognize it means change, and change isn't always the easiest thing to manage. So again, that's why we present it, to seek the advice of the council. Noted.
Anyone else on the council? You saw the agenda for the next enforcement committee meeting. They're asking for our input, what they should do with what they've developed. Does anyone want to give any direction to the enforcement committee on this issue? Terry?
To remove lobster from their from their agenda and put together a problem statement and work with you to send a letter to the ASMSC.
Work with me to send a letter to the ASMSC regarding lobster.
The issue with lobster gear marking within the 12-mile zone.
Okay. Paul Howard.
Mr. Chairman, they may be able to draft up a letter we could send to the other, you know, the whether it's longline or gillnet gear as well, and we could they could draft up a letter that perhaps we could work with the service to send a permit letter out to folks about gear, and that in the future there may be some pulse ops to ensure compliance.
I think that's a good idea, though. I didn't hear anybody mention longline, Paul. All right, no, I think that's a good direction. So we're going to take Lobster out and write a letter to ASMSC. David Gable?
Well, first of all, at least in my area, if you take Lobster out, you haven't addressed 99% of the problem. I don't support that. But I also think that, you know, requiring the Coast Guard to run a pulse op, what are they going to do? They can't, you know, they don't have haulers on Coast Guard boats. I mean, they can go out and ride out there and go, yeah, here's an illegal buoy. Now, what are you going to do about it? You know, unless you're going to, you know, send a letter to somebody requesting that all Coast Guard vessels be equipped with pot haulers and gillnet lifters, basically the problem is unsolvable. And so I think, yes, I think a letter to the AFMFC is a good idea. That's in our report. We recognize that we're not even attempting to deal with any issues in state waters whatsoever. This is outside of 3 miles. And, you know, there's a number of people that fish here. We just had in my area, a big to-do about, the midwater trawl fleet showing up and fishing outside of 3 miles, between 3 and 12, and the same thing. I mean, the lobstermen are all furious that their gear gets stowed away, but if you can't see it, how are you going to stay away from it? And these boats fish day and night. There's no radar reflectors on this stuff. You don't know it's there. And so it's a basic problem. We've got, as you look at the paperwork you've been supplied, there's different regulations in every single fishery about gear marking in federal waters, and this is an attempt to standardize the marking requirements, which, you know, seems reasonable to me, so that everybody can try to get along on the ocean as best they can. It's getting to be a crowded place, as the demand from the ocean. The ocean policy people said yesterday, we've got to find a way to allow people to get along. So I don't have a problem with sending a letter to the AFMFC identifying the problem between 3 and 12 miles and saying, we request that you take a look at it. But to just say, oh, exempt lobster gear, I don't think that's a viable solution because it doesn't solve the problem.
I got a lot of hands up. I just note that I've heard two problems. One is that the uniformity of marking so that everybody knows what everybody's up to. The other thing that you said, Dave, was people are fishing where they're not supposed to fish. That's not something we regulate here.
No, I didn't say not supposed to fish. I said they're just fishing in places different than what they used to fish. So anybody can fish anywhere they want. It's a free ocean so far.
Okay. I had hands all over. I got Paul Howard, Terry Stockwell, Doug Grout.
Quickly, Mr. Chairman, I think these kind of gear conflicts come up every decade or so, and our past experience and dialogue was that these are spatial problems, that the people that fish in a particular area should get together and work things out, because a holistic regulation is not the way to address this stuff. It's just not going to work. And in the past, the Coast Guard has facilitated meetings and groups and things like that to resolve gear conflicts. And this is what this is under a different name. It's really gear conflict. We should identify the areas where there's gear conflicts and encourage the participants or those who fish in those areas to get together. And if they need assistance to, you know, broker a deal, that's we can come back to this body and try to do that. But I'm not convinced that spending time to a consistency plan about gears and all that is the right solution right now.
Terry, Doug, then Mr. Libby.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to address the enforcement concerns. Every state has a JEA. Maine maintains a fleet of 7 offshore boats, all with lobster hauling capacity. They do haul traps. They do make cases. Part of their mission includes marking. And they do aggressively chase on marked gear for a variety of reasons. We also partner with the Commonwealth in New Hampshire. Just recently, Doug hosted a meeting about gear flickers. They were Marine Patrol and New Hampshire Fish and Game, NOAA Enforcement, Coast Guard, all met to address gear conflict issues. But I think that a problem statement from the Enforcement Committee to the ASMSC will go a long way. This council trying to be involved with a fishery that we don't manage will backfire. I don't think we'll get the results that we're all looking for.
Thanks, Terry. Doug?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree that the way to handle at least the lobster trap issue is to let the ASMSC handle this statement problem would be appropriate. And I agree with Paul. As Terry just mentioned, we had a meeting. We had had severe gear conflict last year. A lot of lobstermen lost large amounts of gear. We had a meeting this year, and it seems to have, by getting the two groups to communicate with each other, it seems to have drastically reduced the loss of lobster gear in an area where midwater trawls were fishing. So I think, outside of the fact that I think ASMSC will also provide a public process for our lobstermen to get involved with determining what the best way to handle this is.
Thanks, Doug. Mr. Libby?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I guess it's a question for someone on the Enforcement Committee. It's my understanding that right now, up to three traps in a trawl, you don't need a high flyer. Are you suggesting that that change, that we put high flyers on all the lobster gear?
Yeah, it was a requirement to just put a high flyer on one end. You'd only be required one buoy, and that's because of the tide situation. That usually where those three trap or less occurs in areas of high tide. That's why they don't set trawls there in the first place. So, yeah, it was just one buoy that you could see as opposed to a 5x7 or something like that that you can't see unless it's a black calm day.
Yeah, thank you. That might be helpful as an ASMSC suggestion. Just based on experience fishing around the trap trawls like that. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move right into the Scallop Committee report.